This podcast is brought to you by eRadio. For more podcasts, check out our website on eradiosa.com or download the eRadio SA app from the Google Play Store. Enjoy.
And welcome back to the Tech Show with myself, Kane, and Eoin. Eoin, how are you doing today?
Hello, Kane. Good and you?
If you're just tuning in, this is where we take a look at the latest tech news every single week. Same time, same place, but the weather gets better.
Yes, it does. Well, except for tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be freezing.
We don't talk about that.
We only look at the positives. Okay, I'm with you.
The week is four days of sunny days this next week.
Yes.
But it is sunny and it is nice at the moment, eh?
Yes, wow. Absolutely, yeah. Thank goodness. And then obviously the important rugby this afternoon.
The second
in
time.
In Cape Town, yeah.
How did you feel about that first match?
Yeah, it was close.
Close, eh?
Close. Ooh. Too close for comfort, but it was good. It was very good.
The thing that gets me is, you know, that the first match was the World Cup. Then it was this match, and now it's the third. New Zealand's not going to go out 0-3.
Yeah,
they're gonna. This is if they're ever going to put a good fight on it. It's this next match.
Yep, that team's amazing. Hey, they're so good.
I know they actually.
But we're also good.
Watching both those teams play is truly like looking at number one and number two in the world.
Yeah,
playing against
you're right.
Each other.
Absolutely, the world's best. Team,
we get to see the World Cup final three times.
It is, yeah. So I think it's gonna be a good one. I've already stocked up on Biltong. So
man, you have to be. It's how you sustain yourself through such stressful times. I actually read something that the All Blacks haven't lost in their home turf in like 50 years or something like that. Obviously, they're playing and they're not playing at their home turf now, but
that is
quite a record to hold. I wonder how much pressure you feel running onto that
crazy
field.
Yeah. You know? No, it's going to be a big day in the Mother City for the match. But Kane, how's it going in tech world?
The tech world is full of life as usual. Plenty AI stuff for us to be taking a look at this week. I mean, we even saw that one of the founders for ChatGPT, OpenAI's ChatGPT, who actually tried to oust Sam Altman. He came out a while ago, said Sam Altman doesn't care about the future of mankind. You know, he's not concerned about the safety elements of AI. They parted ways. And in parting ways, the guy that left Sam Altman, who wasn't a part of OpenAI anymore, actually went and successfully raised $1 billion to start his own AI company, which is apparently Safe Artificial Intelligence.
Oh, all right.
Or Safe Super Intelligence is what they call it.
That sounds interesting.
So their play is kind of safe AI. I don't know how safe AI is when there's AI that doesn't have to be safe. That's also
rampant. Why should it be mentioned?
But that's not the only thing that happened. Vodacom apparently scored a win against our Please Call Me Idea Man. This is the Constitutional Court says it will hear Vodacom's appeal against a Supreme Court ruling in favor of Please Call Me Idea Man. And Vodacom announced the development on the JSE news service on Tuesday. The Constitutional Court of South Africa issued a derivative that it will hear Vodacom South Africa's application for leave to appeal in the PCM matter in tandem with its appeal against the SCA judgment. Basically, what they're saying is Vodacom has an opportunity to appeal the previous ruling that said they have to pay more money than any any person would probably be okay paying. You know, I'm not surprised Vodacom is fighting it. I do think he's owed fair compensation. I don't think in the billions is necessarily fair compensation, but he does deserve fair compensation, and Vodacom would be stupid if they didn't appeal at least once to the decision for them to have to drop billions of rands on this Please Call Me creator who created created the idea or the infrastructure for the Please Call Me service all those years ago. which is absolutely crazy. And then also next up, we're taking a look at some other developments as well. Apparently, there's been some leaks for the PS5 Pro. Anybody who plays PlayStation would probably care that we've seen some early stage releases for the PS5 Pro. In fact, Sony just recently celebrated their 30th anniversary. Can you even believe for a second that PlayStation has been around for 30 years?
Now I'm feeling old.
30 years.
Yeah, I can actually believe it. Yeah, it goes quickly, hey?
No, that's 1994.
Yeah.
30 years ago, man. 1994. PlayStation is older than me. And it doesn't feel that old. It feels like it came out somewhere in the late 2000s.
What did the very first one look like?
I have trouble even remembering a thing before PlayStation 1. I remember the PlayStation 1. But I don't feel like the PlayStation 1 came out in 1994.
No.
When must did have been the something PlayStation before that. 1 come out? Did you ever play a PlayStation 1?
No, I don't think that was the PlayStation 1. That was probably like a newer version in the 2000s.
It came out in September 1995. Wow. It officially launched on the 3rd of December 1994, the PlayStation 1. If you told me that the PlayStation 1 is older than me, I wouldn't have believed you. But it is. It is by a whopping 2 years.
Yikes. Wow. Yikes.
I couldn't believe it's been here so long. How long has an Xbox been here? I don't know.
Are you going to tell us?
When do you think Xbox launched? Do you think Xbox is older than PlayStation?
No, Xbox came later. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Xbox came later.
Do you think before 2000 or after 2000?
Nah, I think it was after 2000.
Really? You don't think it was? Because, I mean, that means PlayStation was out for 6 years and then here comes Xbox. But you would be correct. November 15, 2001.
Ah, I knew
7
it.
7 years after PlayStation, the competitor came along.
Yeah, the Xbox wasn't always on the scene. It was like a new thing. Okay, cool.
That is crazy.
Now we know.
The more you know. Speaking of which, apparently, Bill Gates has come out and he said he's actually having a pretty good feeling about AI at the moment. The Verge apparently spoke with Bill Gates about AI, misinformation and climate change. And apparently Bill Gates is, you know, relatively confident about the development of AI. He feels there could be some serious, you know, real world application of the tech. I would hope so after all the millions and billions that we're spending on it. But it's always interesting hearing Bill Gates' take on it as the man who created the foundations necessary to have a personal computer to the degree we had. I think if it wasn't for the Microsoft Apple competition, we wouldn't have seen computers or the personal computer advance at quite the rate that it has. And now you have quite a clear line divide between Windows and Mac. In fact, it's actually a comedic like battle between the two, which is better. But there's not 10 of the options. It's just two.
Yeah.
So Bill Gates obviously feeling good about AI does suggest that. I mean, we've seen Samsung going hard on AI at the moment.
Yep.
Their new slogan is AI for all. Really? So they're buying mega big billboards in mega cities and they're just kind of plastering AI for all on it. Interestingly enough, though, if you want to make use of the new smartphones AI tech, Google Pixel has some AI tech when you take photos and things like that. Samsung has some AI tech and Apple has some AI tech. But I think Samsung's the only phone company to say that they're bringing the AI tech to previous Samsungs. So for me, for example, I have the iPhone 15. So when Apple AI came out or Apple Intelligence came out, I didn't get access to it because I didn't have the iPhone 15 Pro. So only the Pro onwards got the AI.
It feels like you can never have the latest iPhone. There's always something new coming up.
You can never have the best phone to have the best software, apparently.
Yeah.
It's the constant chase. What would you say when Bill Gates was really coming out of the personal computer, was he that much in your frame of view? Were you like trying to live your life hearing about Bill Gates, or did you kind of only hear about him once the computer had been quite established?
Yeah. What you just said.
When it was established.
Uh-huh. And you?
I didn't hear about his come up. I just always knew Bill Gates is like the richest man in the world. You know, everyone always used to speak about the richest man makes $1,000 every minute you breathe. And, you know, those are the kind of stats we used to speak about in school and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's the only way I knew
Bill Gates,
them.
Eh? Yeah.
So apparently also the Astrobot, speaking of the PS5, Astrobot just launched on the PS5 with a cute little countdown party inside Astro's Playroom, if you're going to watch the clip below. So apparently you can get like cool little, you know, if you've ever played the PlayStation game Astrobot, it's like a little, it's the character looks like a little robot, and you can actually go and buy those if you get one of the new games, which is pretty, pretty cool. Then next up, we have the Telegram CEO. Remember the Telegram CEO got arrested?
Yep.
And we were talking about why he got arrested and what they
were
trying to say.
Is he still in custody?
So let's rewind for a second for the audience. Anyone who doesn't know, last week we were speaking about on the tech show, the Telegram CEO was arrested when he was moving through France. And the reason that he was arrested is because Telegram's policy is to not give any message information, encrypted private messages, group information, any degree of moderation outside of what their policy is, which is kind of like a very strong free speech policy. It's your messages, it's your chat, it's none of our business. That's kind of their policy, and they say it's none of anyone else's business either. So France decided, okay, well, there's definitely things that you're doing on your app that we don't like. You know, there's piracy, there's, you know, drugs, there's all sorts of stuff going on Telegram, and that's what happens when something is unmoderated. You get the good and you get the worst. So that worst part is what France is specifically interested in, and obviously they've been trying time and time again to get the CEO and get Telegram to release information on certain individuals that they're obviously trying to arrest and things like that, and they weren't playing ball. So their resolve was, okay, well then we'll arrest the CEO and charge him for the crimes that he won't help us charge the responsible parties for. So they're basically saying, because you use your platform to prevent us from bringing to justice the people that abuse your platform to get, you know, to do nefarious things, we're going to, in essence, charge you with those crimes. And I think more than them actually trying to make someone guilty, I think they're putting pressure on them to actually try and get this information. So as such, 12 days after he was arrested in France, the Telegram CEO Pavel Durov has broken his silence with a 600-word statement on his Telegram account that blames growing pains that made it easier for criminals to abuse our platform. One of the things that he actually came out to say was, it's crazy to arrest a owner of a company because of what people have abused that company's platform for. So he says they're kind of circumventing system policies, being bad actors, you know, doing bad things, and you can't blame the owners for those bad things that are happening. It's not exactly the strongest argument, because they are refusing things.
Yeah,
they're not playing with them.
Yeah, but I get it.
Well, it's a difficult play for them, because their USP is, we won't give your information out. So to give their information out arguably would damage their company more than any other single action, because the primary unique selling point now becomes null and void. So it is really to protect the integrity of Telegram to not reveal this information. It is a real rock and a hard place for the CEO. So French authorities have charged him with enabling various forms of criminal activity on Telegram, and you know, plenty materials and things like that on the platform that are just not good, especially not for unmoderated eyes. And while the vast majority of his statement today paints his arrest as surprising and unfair, he also admits that policing Telegram has become harder, and it's his personal goal now to significantly improve things in this regard. It's crazy how getting arrested kind of shakes up one's priorities slightly.
Yeah.
The full statement was, thanks everyone for your support and love. Last month I got interviewed by police for 4 days after arriving in Paris. I was told I may be personally responsible for other people's illegal use of Telegram because the French authorities didn't receive responses from Telegram, the company. This was surprising for several reasons. One, Telegram has an official representative in the EU that accepts and replies to EU requests. Its email address has been publicly available for anyone in the EU who Googles Telegram EU address for law enforcement. Two, the French authorities had numerous ways to reach me to request assistance. As a French citizen, I was a frequent guest at the French consulate in Dubai a while ago. When asked, he was personally helped with them to establish a hotline. And number three, if the country is unhappy with an internet service, the established practice is to start a legal action against the service itself. So he's basically, he's got a pretty hard, he's got a pretty hard next few weeks ahead of him with,
yeah,
with trying to weasel out of that one.
Yeah, but I'm sure with all his money, he's got good legal representation.
It's definitely helping his case.
Yes. You know,
it's definitely helping his case. Then next up, we're taking a look at a new type of fashion technique we saw recently. Back in 2022, LG revealed a high-resolution display that can be stretched, folded, and twisted, and we can now see them imagined as material that can be used in clothing and accessories.
Oh my god.
Korean designers Yonghee Park and Chung Chung Lee have incorporated them into clothing and handbags and will present them at the Seoul Fashion Week. I've actually got a picture of this fabric that is actually like a panel. It literally looks like an LED panel, but it's a shirt material. So imagine a shirt with LEDs in, but on like a on a panel level, like a screen. It looks like a TV on your dress.
Yeah.
And
but why?
I don't know how you feel
do
about
we,
it.
Do we need it?
Am I the only one who's gonna say, like, when your kids are bored or something, do you put like cartoons on your back and just let them watch them?
That's actually a bloody good idea.
Well, I don't know what else you would do, because in the picture that I saw, and you know, like, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it kind of looks like she's wearing, it looks like she's, in all fairness, it looks like she's wearing a see-through garbage bag.
Yeah.
With a piece of material, like, badly attached to it.
Yeah.
It's not striking
what me is strange, yeah,
as incredible fashion, but
at least you can see her coming in the dark.
But there you go. You know what I saw the other day as well? I saw someone walking through town here in Nasna, and their backpack had LEDs on. It was like a whole display, and it had like a Pac-Man like going around. And
all
like
right.
All sorts of like different displays.
That's and new.
It said like Cape Town on it. It was like, wow, a whole adventure. Okay. I think I stopped that's him new and asked him where he got it from, and he said Alibaba.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So there you go. If you want an LED bag, that's pretty cool for school. I would have rocked that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I would have had, like, test answers, like, rolling through the bag.
Oh, that's a brilliant idea, actually.
That is pretty cool. Yeah. If you could have an LED, let's say the front part of your shirt was LED, what would you display on it? Like, what would be your, if you could customize it in whatever creative way you wanted, what would you put
probably
on your shirt?
Probably like a microphone or a music note.
Just like, would it be like constantly changing into different notes?
Yeah, it could.
Okay.
Yeah,
I quite like
up and
it
down a bit, yeah. So, and you, what would you have on there?
Jeez, that's a great question. I probably would do something like, I would do something where it makes you feel like the shirt is checkered, but then it turns into lines.
Oh, wow.
And then it turns into thin lines, and then like the big and small checker. Like, to just completely keep you on your toes. Like, did I see that right? Does that look
then
the same
everybody's
still
gonna get dizzy when they speak to you.
Start like the spiral, you know. It's an illusion.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Or like, I would do other things that if I talk and it hears me talking, it would be like, he's lying.
Oh,
don't
wow
listen to him.
So you are very creative. Mine is so boring compared to what
that's
you've got
what in. I would do.
Yeah.
That was what I would do. Speaking of clothing with LEDs on, Google, actually coming out quite clutch here, is making it easier to visualize yourself in different dress styles. After launching its AI-powered try-on tool for shirts and blouses in search last year, Google is expanding it to dresses. That means you can use the try-on button to see how dresses might realistically look on models with different body types, ranging from XXS, extra extra small, to XXXL, extra large. And this is what I think is pretty cool for me, because it uses AI technology to do this. So I just love the way, I love learning about how an AI was trained and then the app, what it can do in the real world. For example, what did they do to train this AI? Hard and easy, super hard and super easy at the same time. First thing you need, a shirt or a pants, an item of clothing.
Yeah.
The second thing you need is that item of clothing in every single size. And the third thing you need is people with different body types wearing each and every relevant size. and then you can train a data model to understand how a shirt fits to a certain person, or how a certain type of shirt or a certain type of fit fits at a certain size fits to a certain body shape. And now you're able to actually create a pretty unique tool that you can go, hey, this is the dress I want to buy, this is my body type, can you give me a realistic image of what this dress or this outfit might look like on my body type? You know, would I look good with this tapered V? You know, for guys and girls, I think it would be super duper useful. Plus, for clothing companies, when you don't need to go try on a piece of clothing, and you can with 90% accuracy rely on AI fitting to tell you whether or not something's going to fit you, that is crazy. Because that means you will one day be able to walk into a shop where it scans your body and shows you every single type of clothing that'll fit you well in the shop.
Ooh.
Can you imagine that?
Wow.
That's a different way to shop now, isn't
that? That's mind-blowing.
Right? Unlike my technique, which is to find the coolest looking clothes with the absolute worst fit and buy it.
Yeah, it's so hard ordering online, hey, because all the sizes are actually different. Like, a large is sometimes an extra large, and a large is sometimes a small in another brand. So if you used to buy a large, you have to buy an extra large, or the other way around.
Or it's like, for me, it's always the small things, like pants, for example. You know, I might buy a large pair of pants, but if the hole that your leg goes in isn't wide enough, then like I have like a small fit. But a super wide waist.
Yeah, what a strange... You get these weird cuts, hey? Especially when you order from like... where was it? I ordered a hoodie, but like the whole... like the chest part is so narrow, but the arms are so long.
Have you ever gotten the
pair weirdest
of,
thing?
You have you ever gotten the pair of pants that have a piece of rope so long that you could actually use it to make yourself slacks?
No, what?
Man, I had these long pair of pants where the string was so long, bro. It would go like below the knees. You know the string that you use to tie it? It would be like tying a mega shoelace. Anyway, on to some other news. We have YouTube that's finally come to the ball here for creators. YouTube is making new tools to protect creators from AI copycats. So last week we spoke about what I thought was a very interesting topic, which is the birth of all these cool AI tools that let you do things like take a photo and put your mom in the photo because she wasn't there, or, you know, go take a photo of the heads, but there's this pesky, you know, old person in the ways, you just remove them completely.
Pesky.
You know? Or let's say you take a photo, but you're like, you're somewhere cool, but you look super lonely, so you put like 10 fake people around you so you look like you're having a good time. That's some cool features that AI might have.
Yeah.
As a joke, maybe you take a photo of your car but you don't like it red, so you make it green, and everyone's like, where did you get a green car?
That's quite drastic. Yeah.
Those are the real friendly things. But what happens when you go to a restaurant and you take a photo of your food but you've put a fake insect on it? You know,
yeah, or mold or something.
Or mold, yeah. Or you make it look like the tomato is literally like still green. It's still got the root attached to it.
Oh, that's,
you know,
horrible. Yeah.
Or any of those things. Have you ever opened a banana that's not ripe yet?
Oh yes.
No, not pleasant at all.
No.
So you could easily photo manipulate things that weren't actually like that and create a stir and create confusion, and that could be a problem. I mean, think about it. You could walk into town, go into George Rex and take a photo of the road and say, massive pothole. And now the whole of NYSA doesn't want to use a specific road because they think there's a pothole there. And it's kind of like the parts of AI that we didn't expect to be used a lot kind of coming to fruition. Because if you had a business and it was a food business and people like were boycotting your business by taking photos of the food and putting fake, you know, mold and fake dirt and fake insects and making the food look worse than it actually is, you're going to be so lost. You're going to feel like defeated. What could you possibly do? They can make it sound like anything. All you can do is say it's not real. You know, so those kind of problems are something we might see. But before we see it as business owners and things like that, you know who might see it first? Like YouTube content creators. What about people that make all this cool content, but then AI is like copying it? They're just downloading all of their videos, training the AI and making content similar to it.
True.
And I know a lot of animators and stuff like that that could be challenged by something like that. So the platform, YouTube, is developing separate tools for identifying content, simulating performers' voices, and facial deepfakes of creators. YouTube is developing new tools that aim to give creators on the platform more control over content that copies their voice or likeness using generative AI. In its announcement post, YouTube says the new likeness management tech will help to safeguard its creators and partners while enabling them to harness AI's creative potential by promoting responsible AI development. The first tool, described as a synthetic singing identification technology, will allow artists and creators to automatically detect and manage YouTube content that simulates their singing voices using generative AI. YouTube says the tool sits within the existing Content ID copyright identification system and that it's planning to test it under a pilot program next year. Very, very cool. Good to see a few bit of protection come in place for these creators. And time for a music break.
Let's go for some music. And welcome back to Tech Plus on this Saturday with myself, Jan, and also Kane. Now, the car company Volvo has abandoned its target to produce only fully electric cars by 2030. They say it now expects to be selling some hybrid vehicles by that date instead. The car maker blamed changing market conditions for its decision to give up a target it had announced only 3 years ago. It comes as the industry faces a slowdown in demand in some major markets for electric vehicles or EVs and uncertainty due to the imposition of trade tariffs on EVs made in China. So, Volvo now expects at least 90% of its output to be made up of both electric cars and plug-in hybrids by 2030. What do you say about that?
So they're ditching the whole only EVs route.
Yeah, it doesn't look very realistic to them. So they kind of,
You know, it makes sense. To be honest, it makes sense because, I mean, Volvo isn't a young car brand. It's been around for ages. And what happens when a business is around for ages? It establishes like really reliable channels for it to get parts, for it to get components for its engineering processes. And now you've shaken up that whole industry, you're changing the whole manufacturing process, engines no longer work the same, it's no longer petrol, it's electric. I think when you shuffle up that many principal systems in a business and you say we are doing away with everything that we've built up until now to replace it with something that we've never done from now, I think it's a bit more challenging than it might sound in the beginning. I think having a dream of producing only electric cars sounds really good on paper, but when it comes to modifying an existing business model into something that can work for a new type of market, I think that becomes difficult. Tesla has the upper hand because they established a new business framework. They built all the ins and outs of their business to work with electric vehicles, from their supply chains to their branding, to their manufacturing lines, the engineers. It was all centered around creating the first ever electric car and selling a lot of them. Whereas Volvo creates petrol and maybe even some diesel cars and has never had its priority be electric. So I think when it tries to make such a big pivot, it might be more messy than just starting a new business. So that kind of makes sense to me. I think I back them. And I think hybrid has more application in the next 20 to 30 years than all electric.
Definitely,
at this stage. Nothing worse than not being able to charge your car, you know.
Yeah, that must be a nightmare.
Must be a nightmare. You know what is crazy is this new piece of tech that I came across. It's it's called the Remarkable Paper Pro. It's basically a 11-point inch display device, and it looks just like a piece of paper.
What?
You know when you open an exam pad and you've got the lines, or maybe one of those little notebooks that have the exam pad like lines in it. It looks like you've just opened a book on your first page of your exam pad, and this is a tablet that you can doodle on and draw on and clear, and it's $580 for this e-pad. This e-pad. It's like 10,000 rand. Would you pay 10,000 rand for a notebook that never runs out of paper or ink?
No.
That you can send the notes you write on this notepad to your PC?
No.
So anything you note down physically?
Maybe, it would be nice for a writer, maybe.
You know what I think they need to solve? I think they need to solve the feeling. Have you ever used a tablet pen? Like a phone's pen tablet, like a stencil. You know, the actual pen.
Yes.
When you draw on a screen, it's like, it doesn't have that paper texture.
No.
There's a certain resistance when you draw on a piece of paper.
I think they're still working on it.
And that resistance that you feel is actually what, for me, is the nice part about writing on paper. It's not that it comes down, it's that there's this pressure, there's resistance, there's muscle being used, your hand can get sore. And yeah. I think when you're going through the whole process, that becomes more memorable. Because when I draw with a pen on a piece of glass, I don't remember anything I'm writing.
Yeah,
down.
It's not the same.
It's not the same. Mm-mm. So maybe this 10,000 rand e-pad has a little bit of something like that. Because then I'd be interested in it. Then I'd be like, okay, maybe I'll... If it has that feel, if it's that resistance, that texture, yeah, that grain...
I know
grain,
exactly what you mean.
That yeah. ballpoint pen on...
Oh, nothing
feel,
beats it. Yeah,
you know?
Nothing beats it.
The other day, I actually bought myself like a nice journal.
Oh,
or
nice.
Just an exam pad with like a nice fancy like 300 rand pen. It's great.
Nice.
Great experience. Doodling around.
What are you doing? Are you drawing?
I don't know. I find in my day, I'll always note some facts about my day. So I'll talk about, you know, maybe the work-related highlights and the fitness-related highlights. And then I'll end up being on calls and stuff throughout the day. So I'll doodle. Thing becomes a whole... other, you know, it started off as like a few notes, but now it's like a Picasso. It's got like doodle art and it's
that's so
very
cool.
messy. But
okay, so it's not like a Dear Diary situation.
No. Today I had a good day, you know, but nothing like that.
Because I want to see that diary.
So there you go. If you're tired of running out of paper, don't worry. For the price of 300 exam pads and 500 pens, you too can have an electric pen pad. Solution to your problem. I still think it's pretty. If someone gave it to me as a gift, I'd use it, but I don't think I'd seek it out.
Yeah, won't say no to
and
it.
I don't know if it would still replace me actually using paper.
Mm-mm.
I feel like it would replace me using my phone.
Yeah.
I don't think it would replace me using paper because paper, you can even. I mean, there's just so much you can do with paper. A grocery list on paper is more effective to me than a grocery list on notes.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's kind of
I
one
prefer
of those
it as
weird
well.
Things.
I mean, look at this here. This is my diary. It's a paper diary. Old
How
fashioned.
How many did you go through a year?
Paper diary.
One.
No, one, but it's damn full.
Do you ever recap it? Or does days just disappear? Do you ever come back around?
I
wonder what happened
go
on
back.
September 5th,
yeah, already?
2023.
Oh, no, I haven't done that yet.
Really? You should, every day that you wake up on, you should go back to the
idea.
Previous year's
wow,
day and see what
would
you. Especially if you've got notes down. I would
Your microphone's actually standing on last year's diary.
Should compare years. What did September 4th, 2022, Ian, think about today?
Guess what I'm doing when you're leaving?
You're going to check every Don't forget to put that one
brilliant.
In your diary.
That's a good idea, actually. Thanks.
It is a diary reception. You start writing in your diary about how you compared all your diaries. That is crazy. Okay, next up, we have something very interesting. We spoke about AI. Do you know what Canva is?
Of course.
Yeah, who doesn't know Canva?
It's every graphic designer's best friend.
Yeah, especially if you're not trying to get sucked into mega workflows. If you just want to get good designs done, get it on socials, and have an easy workflow, you have some creative inspo, Canva's the way.
Also, that's the go-to app for any social media manager as well, because... You know, it makes it so easy, especially with the built-in AI. You know, it's got all these pre-compiled templates that you can make your own and legally so.
Yep, our company would use Canva in and amongst our own curated workflow.
I think it's a brilliant tool.
So now you're going to be paying for a brilliant tool because apparently the design software company is massively jacking up its subscription prices for some of its users.
Oh dear.
The price of Canva subscriptions are set to skyrocket next year following the company's aggressive rollout of generative AI features. Global customers for Canva Teams, a business-oriented subscription that supports adding multiple users, can expect prices to increase by just over 300%. In some instances.
Uh-oh.
Canva says the increase is justifiable due to the expanded product experience and the value that generative AI tools have brought to the platform. In the US, some Canva team users are reporting subscription increases from $120 per year for up to 5 years to an eye-watering $500 per year. A 40% discount will be applied to bring that price down to $300 for the first 12 months. In Australia, the fat $39 fee. So it's expensive. There's no way around it. You're talking about 10,000 rand a year for design software. Under 800, 600, 700 rand a month. That's a lot of money. That's more than Adobe almost.
Because right now, just the normal Canva for one user is actually quite affordable. I mean, it's just 100 and something rand a month. I think that's brilliant. And I mean, then you can use all those fancy stock images and everything for free.
And I think Canva is a very good product.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know if it's worth that kind of money, because you can't just make generative tools and start, like Adobe made generative tools and didn't charge anyone for it. You made it a generative tools and 3x'd your cost. It's like difference.
Yeah, so, you know, it's Adobe's price, a bit.
Adobe's price stayed the same and AI features came. Canva brought AI features and its price tripled. It's like,
I think they're getting a bit greedy now.
It's not ideal. Maybe a slower sense.
No, not bloody triple, no.
Because that definitely got some news. Next up, we're taking a look at a startup that has accused NVIDIA and Microsoft of patent infringement. In the big corporate world, that's actually pretty big. And it also makes me pretty angry. It's like one of those crimes that you just, like, what's one thing that makes you angry that no one really knows about? Patent infringement. Because you would expect someone like Microsoft and NVIDIA to respect patents, because they're so big. Their business revolves on the protection of their own technical ability and intellectual property.
Yeah.
So Sockets, spelt with an X, not an S, Sockets, says NVIDIA is infringing on its patents for data processing unit technology. A startup funded by the co-founder of Yahoo and CTO of Intel is suing NVIDIA and Microsoft for allegedly infringing on its patent for a key innovation in AI chips and being part of a buying cartel that allegedly sought to artificially fix lower prices for the technology. In a new lawsuit, Texas-based Sockets says NVIDIA has infringed on its patent data processing unit DDP, or DPU technology, which helps make cloud infrastructure more efficient by accelerating data intensive workloads. Sockets says the chip giant inherited the infringement through its 2020 acquisition of Mellanox. It claims Mellanox initially infringed on its patent under Sockets rapidly demonstrated technology. And bottom line is, kind of NVIDIA and Microsoft are sitting in a position where they're kind of using technology that these individuals have patented for themselves. Now, the AI game is huge. We spoke about NVIDIA. I think NVIDIA made $2.3 billion in revenue in terms of their gaming tech sales for the last quarter. Revenue, that's not profits. And then they made $12 billion in profits for AI. So their previous business, which was gaming, netted $3 billion revenue. Their new business, AI, made $12 billion in profit. They 4x'd the revenue of their previous model. So when you're doing stuff like that, don't steal other people's patents, pay your way and get the job done. Like, you got so much money, what are you doing?
Exactly.
What are you doing infringing patents? Get back to, you got, they're literally a technology company, you know, don't do that. So we'll see what happens there, but I hope they actually get a little bit of a, you know, they can afford it. Don't infringe on patents. Someone out there like me and you could have come up with a whole new clever way to process data that has a real life application and participate in some of the acceleration of the AI systems. And we're sitting there like not celebrating because the big boys stole that idea because they're so big. That's not fair.
That's not fair. Listen, now before we go to music, quickly, yes. You know, Mike Lynch, the British tech entrepreneur who was on that very fancy yacht near Sicily, and then it sank.
Yes.
I see HP, Hewlett Packard.
Yes.
They're still going on with the court case now.
Really?
They didn't stop it now that he passed. They are actually suing his estate. Can you believe this, eh? So they're quite serious about whatever it is they're suing him for.
Wow.
He's no longer here. Now they're suing his estate. Eh?
It's almost like a strategy, because it's probably easier to sue an estate, because when you're wrapping up an estate, you know, debtors can just come and claim on your estate. It's much easier process than trying to hook a guy in court. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I'm not going to play into the conspiracy, but it doesn't surprise me that someone like a big company is swishing the little guy. We literally just spoke about it. So.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm kind of thinking about that story now.
Very sad.
Very, very sad. Let's go for some music. And we're back here on Tech Plus. Kane, poor old Elon is not going to be happy about this story.
Oh no, what happened?
Because, well, it's going to happen.
it's not what has happened, it's what's going to happen.
A record number of firms plan to cut their advertising spend on X, formerly known as Twitter, next year because of concerns that extreme content on the platform could damage their brands, dealing another blow to the financial fortunes of Mr. Elon Musk's social media company. A global survey by market research firm Kantar found that a net 26% of marketers plan to decrease their spending on X in 2025, the biggest recorded pullback from any major global ad platform. Can you understand how they feel from a advertiser's perspective?
I think there's definitely some concerns. I mean, we've run some Twitter ads in the past and we found it very difficult to articulate results. Unfortunately, there was a, you know, there's this feeling that the ads are being delivered but not to the right people. So our results weren't where we wanted them to be. I don't think anybody would have, you know, I think our net marginal result was zero action on a quite a large spend.
Sure.
And there could be many reasons why that could have gone wrong. It's not just to blame X, but there's definitely, there feels like an imaginary barrier between yourself and the customer when you're trying to advertise on X right now. And I'll give you some examples of why that might feel like that. Well, first of all, we had clear reach and clear view, but no action, which is a very strange one.
Mm.
Also, we restricted our ads to be shown only to people over the age of 21. And we had samples of audiences coming in between the ages of 18 and 21. So if we've specified that we do not want to reach people beyond the age of 21, yet we are reaching people between the ages of 18 and 21, that's a big problem, because maybe not in SA, because there's not much difference between 21 and 18 in SA, but in America, it's the difference between showing an alcohol ad to someone of legal age and not of legal age.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can't just accidentally have people between the ages of 18 and 21 just slipping in to your campaign that's supposed to be 21 and up.
Yeah.
As a cup, that's why you say when you're a company, you want to step away from it because you don't want to get yourself in trouble. What's worse than having a bad ad campaign on X? Advertising alcohol to people under the legal age. Big problem, you know? Don't want to advertise if that can be a thing that can mistakenly happen. If the problem is that the placement is a bit fluid, what happens when I have an alcohol ad underneath a post about someone who just, you know, or what if I have a post about, you know, some product and someone just passed away from abusing that product and my ad is right underneath it to buy it at your earliest convenience at a discount?
You do not want
your ad in those places.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That's where I think they need to
clean
up.
Understand it, yeah.
I do not have, unfortunately though, the more advertisers that leave Twitter, the easier you make it for advertisers to reach people, the cheaper you make it for other advertisers to reach the people that they want to reach on Twitter. So I think as people leave, people will come. But
yeah,
I think they have warranted problems that need to be addressed, and I'm sure X will address those problems as time goes by. I just wouldn't advise doing any advertising on it at the moment. That's for sure.
Yeah, because it says, yeah, only 4% of marketers overall think X ads provide brand safety. You know, certainty that their ads won't appear alongside extreme content. I mean, imagine having it next to adult content.
You don't want that. Absolutely not.
Compared with 39% for Google ads. And also, consumers, on the other hand, feel more positive about ads on X. Why? Because there will be fewer.
Naturally.
Yeah.
Naturally. I guess for someone like X, there's a fine line between a free customer and a paying customer.
Mm.
And I think in any business, we see that. But speaking of free and paid customers, do you know who just hit a crap load of paid customers?
Who?
OpenAI.
Ah, okay,
just
makes sense.
Hit 1 million paid corporate customers.
Wow.
Meaning those are teams, enterprises, and all that. So it's not your personal account. If me and you go and buy a GBT account, we're like a personal user. These are corporates. These are teams. These are business teams. These are teams of writers, designers, artists. Who knows what composition these teams have? But what we do know is that there's a million of these types of teams currently using OpenAI, which is huge. A million customers is no joke. A million corporate customers is no joke. I don't even want to know how many normal customers they have. And if you think that wasn't scary enough, we're getting closer to what you ask. To vacuums, the robot vacuums, our Roombas.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, have you still got yours?
Yes.
Is he behaving?
Yes.
Any escape attempts?
No, but he does have a kryptonite. He doesn't get upstairs so well.
Oh,
or at all, should I say. There's no...
Fair enough.
Cannot mount the stairs.
Shame, man.
But that hasn't stopped Roborock's latest RoboVac, which has an auto-lift chassis that can raise its body to navigate high transitions like stairs, which are apparently only a small step away. So we might soon have Roombas that can go upstairs. I don't know what's more impressive, a Roomba going up a stairs or a Roomba surviving a fall down the stairs.
I think we're going to have some really funny content coming. But listen, how funny is it that grandma won't be able to get up the stairs, but the vacuum
cleaner
can?
But the Roomba can. Roomba can cartwheel up the stairs.
Exactly.
That is crazy. Soon you're just going to see the Roomba navigating the wall. Spider Roomba. Yeah. Spider bot.
Because you've got grandma in one of those chairs that go up, you know, on the side of the steps.
And then the Roomba next to her. Granite
I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it. Right,
I'm going to see ads like that. Now.
Yeah, you know, I'm seeing
the Roomba following the gran around the house, just cleaning in front of her. Around. Brilliant. Give that man an ad. Okay, next up, we're taking a look at. I didn't even think this was possible. We're taking a look at gaming monitors and their panels specifically. So, in traditional sense, if you have just a run-of-the-mill generic panel, we measure its ability to be smooth and display things quickly as frames per second.
Yeah.
But in the computer world, in the panel world, the technology, we refer to its measurement as hertz.
Yes.
So if your computer can do 1 hertz a second, it can show one frame, one static image a second. If it can do 60 hertz, it can show 60 frames a second. Most movies that you watch at the cinema are 24 frames per second.
Okay.
So there's a bit of something interesting. Very cinematic, old school cinematic stuff is like 24 frames. High quality movies and stuff is about 30 frames to 60 frames.
Wow, okay.
And gamers usually try and play from anywhere from 60 to 120 frames.
Wow.
A really good amount of frames would be maybe 240. That's going to be like your esports level, all the way to 360. And the human eye has, we don't know how many frames the human eye sees. Arguably, the human eye doesn't see in frames. It sees in one long fluid motion. So there could be an infinite number of frames.
Yeah.
However, we have now just heard that monitor panels have successfully reached 600 hertz.
Whoa.
Which is essentially 600 frames per second.
Is that not too fast for our brains? We must find out.
If you watch a normal movie at 24 frames, and this is going at 600, that's more than 20 times more frames per second.
Is it not going to be blurry? It's too fast.
Do you want to hear something very interesting about frames? It's a bit of a nerdy stat.
Yeah,
but there's actual scientific studies dedicated just to this strange anomaly. Depending on how many hertz your monitor has, you will notice your cursor behave differently. If you have a monitor that has a very low hertz screen, like 30, your mouse will appear very smooth. If you have a high frame rate, like 120, or worst case scenario, 240 or 360, when you move your mouse quickly from one side of the screen to the other, the more hertz your screen is capable of, the more cursors appear on the screen.
Oh.
Have you ever moved your mouse quickly upon the screen? There's clearly three or four mouses on the screen.
I've seen that before,
The more hertz you have, the more mouses are on the screen.
I keep losing my mouse. What does that mean?
And the interesting thing about that is because when you move your mouse quickly across the screen, if you're moving from the left-hand side of the screen to the right-hand side of the screen in half a second, and there's 30 frames per second, when you moved it, there were 15 frames that happened to be shown to your brain when that mouse moved. So when there's 600 frames per second, you're seeing that mouse in 600 different places across the screen in a second.
Wow.
And you're actually seeing multiple mouse cursors.
Ah,
so one thing that often happens to people is they go buy this fancy monitor and now they think it's horrible because suddenly they have like 8, 9, 10 cursors next to each other every time they're moving around. It's like the mouse cursor's buffering. And there's legit studies on light dip and particle movement and the way that photons travel through the air. And they're like, there's scientists that have like broken down this anomaly of why there are more mouse cursors on your screen when it's more hertz.
This is very interesting. Hey, I never knew this. Thank you for sharing.
So now when I see a 600 hertz screen, I just think, no way. You're just going to move your mouse. There's like a million cursors.
That's not the, yeah, that's Yeah, that's actually not nice, hey? Is there no way around it?
I think you get used to it because, you know, when I use my computer, I have like 120 hertz. I have a friend of mine who has a 240 hertz monitor, and one of my laptops actually has 360 hertz. So when you use it, you actually, like, you can obsess on it. You can be like, oh, my word, I can't unsee this. But sometimes you're lucky and you just don't notice it. Okay. But if you're obsessive about it, yeah, it'll probably irritate. You'll probably try and fix it somehow. But that's just an interesting text. That's very interesting.
What does it mean when your mouse keeps disappearing off the screen? No?
Means you have another screen plugged in. It's just not displaying.
Yep, exactly. Clever boy.
That happens to me a lot, I must say.
Yeah, it keeps happening.
Mouse disappears. Or I have three screens, so sometimes my mouse will be somewhere foreign.
Where are you?
I'm looking for this thing. It's like hiding at the top of the house. Like completely out of view.
Oh, that's funny.
Do you know what technology I really thought was cool? That has the cursor type logic now that we're talking about it is LG TVs, their remote.
Oh, yes.
When you point, it has a cursor.
That's pretty cool.
And they have such clever technology because sometimes you'll end up pointing to the left hand side of the screen, but the cursor's sitting on the right.
Yeah.
And when you drag the cursor into the corner of the screen, you can actually line the remote up where the cursor is jammed into the side corner of the screen and line it up so properly. Cool. And then it becomes like properly laser pointer attached.
That's brilliant.
And it's clean, you know. It's like you can totally use it. And
LG, eh?
LG. Life's good.
That's very good.
Or great.
That's great.
New logo. Indeed.
Yeah.
Next up, we're taking a look at NeoLeaf, which makes wall panels that you can put on your walls. Have you ever thought about installing some like LEDs in your room and stuff again? Have you been an LED guy?
Absolutely, yeah.
You should look into Govee.
Okay.
Govee you can get from Takealot, and they're like really the top end producers of lights and
how do I spell like it?
Govee, I think.
Okay,
like I'm making Govee. A note. And they've got some really cool tech. It's a little bit more on the pricey side, but a friend of mine actually introduced me to them, and he bought some of the kit. And I must say, really nice quality. I believe they just made a version for your kitchen.
Whoa. So
if your kitchen doesn't quite hit the RGB tones that you're looking for, you can always install some kitchen LEDs.
Make cooking fun again.
Attach an LED to your knife. like serrate your bread knife as LED every time you slice.
Oh my word.
Disco. That could be really cool. Yeah, man, that's cool. So yeah, Gomi has some kitchen lights for you. Just in case you were trying to spruce up that kitchen. And finally, we're taking a look at Prime Video. They announced that they might be bringing out some more sports.
Ah.
Which has probably got DSTV shaking in its boots.
Again.
Apparently, sources tell the New York Post that Amazon is in talks with Bally Sports for a deal that would simultaneously air the NBA, the NHL, and the MLB games on Prime Video and Prime Cable. The rumored sports package would reportedly let users watch local games for around $20 per month, and Amazon has already an agreement with the NBA that will put dozens of games on Prime Video next season. These are probably very touching times for DSTV as these Netflix is coming out. I mean, Netflix coming out with fights, right? Didn't they have the most recent UFC fight?
Yeah.
Right, live on Netflix. I think Mike Tyson and Jake Paul was going to also be on Netflix at one stage as well. Got Prime coming out with the NBL. So, yeah, we're definitely seeing a rollout of sports on streaming platforms, which is going to make the lives of our good friends up at DSTV and the streaming and the other local streaming services a bit nervous.
Yeah, and I see DSTV actually came down with the price for the premium package on streaming, eh?
Really?
Yeah, so it's cheaper than having premium on your dish.
Man.
But I think you saved like R100.
Wow.
That's not much.
On that surprising note, is it time for a music break?
No, it's time to say goodbye, Kane.
Time to say goodbye.
Yes.
Crazy how quick it
Look
goes,
at this
eh?
Guy. He just wants to carry on and on
I'm
and on.
Ready for next week's tech topic, sir. I'm already digging out the... I'm looking into the future, my crystal ball. What will happen to Elon this year?
One last
topic, actually, before we close off. We were talking about X, and we were talking about some of the ads. Apparently, one of Twitter's longest hailing policy leaders has apparently quit. So X's head of global affairs, Nick Pickles, announced he's leaving the company after a 10-year run. Pickles recently became the ex-CEO Linda Yaccarino's right-hand man and was one of the few remaining senior leaders from Twitter's pre-Musk era. His departure comes right after Brazil banned X due to its refusal to block certain accounts and designate a legal representative in the country. Wow. X really having a bit of a hard one this week. Let's see how they bounce back next
week. Somebody coming into a boardroom and introducing himself as Mr. Pickles.
Mr. Pickles and I'm leaving.
I'm so sorry. I can't take you seriously if you call yourself Mr. Pickles.
Here's Mr. Pickles, head of our privacy policies.
No, man. I'm sorry. That's not working.
At least he sets the expectations low. It's very easy to blow the minds of his listeners because they really start so low.
Mr. Pickles. That really sounds like a cartoon character. Anyway, we're out of time. That's it for another Tech Plus for this week. Kane, thank you so much as always, and enjoy the rest of your weekend, and go Borka.
Go Borka. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you to all of the people listening in. We'll see you same time, same place next week.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
This podcast was brought to you by eRadio. For more podcasts, check out our website on eradiosa.com or through the eRadio SA app from the Google Play Store.